Okay, welcome everybody. Let's begin by cultivating our motivation. I'm really rejoicing that we have this human body and human mind that enable us to understand the Dharma, to differentiate between virtue and non-virtue. Let's rejoice that we have the ability to also differentiate what is one of the eight worldly concerns and what is actual Dharma practice, so that we can engage in actual practice and not waste our time. So in doing that, let's aspire for a good future rebirth, but not be content with that, and aspire also to be liberated from cyclic existence. But also not to be content with that, and with a heart of love and compassion for all beings who want happiness and don't want suffering. Let's generate the aspiration for full enlightenment so that we can be of the greatest benefit to them and to ourselves. And so in that way, let's feel happy that we can make our life meaningful. That this life has some purpose and meaning beyond simple pleasure. So we're at a place in the mind training like rays of the sun, where we are going through the instructions concerning the five precepts that are factors of the training. So we've already talked about transforming adverse circumstances into the path. So what to do if you're sick and miserable and things just aren't going your way. And then the second was the integrated practice of a single lifetime. And that's where we're at right now. Okay, so this is a teaching on what's called the five powers. Just to clarify, these are not the same five powers that we find in the 37 Harmonies with Enlightenment. Okay, these are mind training's five powers. So don't get them confused, because they're a different set of five powers. Same name, different set, different context. Okay, so when we talk about the five powers, there's two ways to do it. One is within the context of this lifetime, and how to practice, and the second is how to practice them at the time of death. Okay, so this is kind of a full, complete practice for life and for death. So very good to learn these. Okay, and not just learn them, but practice them. Okay, so the five powers, are the power of motivation, the power of what's called the white seed or virtuous karmic actions, the power of destruction, the power of prayers of aspiration, and the power of familiarity or acquaintance. Okay, and so these are listed in one order when we do them while we're alive, and in another order when we do them at the time of death. So don't get confused. So here in the book, the actual line from the 7-point thought transformation says, train in the five powers. Very simple. Then the explanation of all of that is what follows. Okay? So we start with the power of intention, the power of motivation. So our author, Nam Kapel, says, we must set a strong determination, thinking, I shall not let the primary or secondary disturbing emotions, that is, the root afflictions or the auxiliary afflictions. How many root afflictions are there? Six. How many auxiliary?
11 and 22.
How many auxiliary? You have all of them. You don't can't even count your own auxiliary afflictions? How many? Go look it up, and I'll ask you next week. Okay? Nobody remembers from the mind and mental factors teachings. Okay. One of them is forgetfulness, which you have. Okay, so make a strong determination thinking, I shall not let the primary or secondary disturbing emotions which arise from the misconception of self dominate my activities of body and speech even for a moment, from now until I attain enlightenment or at any time in this life until I die, this year, this month, and today in particular. That's what's called a run-on sentence. Okay? Let's divide it into... My English teacher would not like this. Okay, but we're making a strong determination not to let the primary, the root or auxiliary disturbing emotions, okay, arise from the grasping itself, okay, the grasping itself of persons and self and phenomena. We don't want to let these afflictions arise and dominate our actions of body and speech, even for a moment, okay, even for an hour, for a day, okay, even for a year. Yeah. So we're not going to let these things arise and dominate our mind. And we're not going to let them arise today or tomorrow or in the next year or forever. So setting a strong intention at the beginning. So this is always very important, because if we don't set a strong intention, we're not going to be able to carry things out. And I think this is often in our Dharma practice where we kind of miss out. In other words, we'll think, oh, that's good to do, but we won't make a strong intention, I'm going to do it. And so then when it comes to doing it, you know, mañana a la mañana. Okay. Whereas when we have a strong intention, then it's more likely that we're going to carry through. So we know this just from ordinary work in our world, but also for the Dharma practice. So that's why, for example, if you want to set up a daily practice, you have to have a strong intention. I'm going to do a daily practice. And then you have to create the circumstances around you so that you'll be able to do that daily practice. Yeah. If you don't have a strong intention, then you're not going to create the circumstances. So then you won't have time to do the practice. When you have a strong intention to do it, then, you know, you write it in your diary that you have an appointment with the Buddha and you're not going to stand up the Buddha. Okay. And then, you know, you deliberately in the evening go to bed at a reasonable time so you can get up in the morning. Yeah. Friends say this and that, come to the movies, blah, blah. You say no thank you because you have a strong intention to do your daily practice. Okay. You arrange your morning kind of rituals and the different things you do so that you have enough time to do your practice. You make sure that anybody you live with knows that you're doing your practice, and that you're doing your practice doesn't mean you don't care about them. It just means that this is an important time for you in the day, and by doing your practice you hope to benefit the whole family and the whole, you know, all the people around you. Okay. So you create that circumstance by preparing all of these things, and then it becomes easy to do your practice. When you don't have a strong intention to do your practice, then if there's something interesting on TV, you stay up late so you oversleep, or, you know, the phone rings early in the morning and you go get it. Or a number of different things can come interrupt you because you don't have that strong intention. So this is also the purpose why we take precepts, because the process of taking precepts is creating an extremely strong intention that we're not going to do certain detrimental actions that we don't want to do, and we're really making a firm decision not to do them. Okay? So, you know, the power of our intention, of our motivation, is very, very important. For worldly things, we have so much motivation. I mean, to make a buck, we'll go to school for 20 years sometimes just to make money. Imagine school for 20 years. Yeah? That's strong motivation, isn't it? Just to make money. Or we'll work overtime. Yeah, all sorts of hours, you know, 12 hours a day, 16 hours a day. Even when we're tired, we get up to go to work for money. Okay, lots of motivation. For Dharma practice? You know? I went to bed 5 minutes later than usual last night. I'm exhausted this morning. Yeah? Okay? So that's why we have to have a really strong motivation. And our motivation has to come from wisdom. And that's why we think about the preciousness of our human life, of our precious human life, and why we think about death, why we think about, you know, the miseries of cyclic existence, because it fires us up to do something. Otherwise, we're just like, you know, kind of, let's just be comfy and, yeah, pretend that misery doesn't exist. Or if it does, it only happens to other people. Okay, so we have to have a very strong intention and cultivate that strong intention and renew it all the time. That's why when we get up in the morning, yeah, first thing today, I am not going to harm anybody, myself or others. That's the most important thing to do today. Yeah, making money, taking the kids places, going to my appointments, these are not the most important things. Because if those don't get done today, they're not getting done, won't give me a bad rebirth. But if I don't abandon harming others, that will give me a bad rebirth. And then how can I benefit anybody if I have a bad rebirth? Okay? So first thing, I'm not going to harm anybody, myself or others. Second thing, I'm going to try and be of as much benefit as I can. So big benefit, small benefit, that's what I'm going to do. So my primary occupation today is not my own selfish pleasure. It's not my ego being comfortable because everybody says nice, sweet words to me and gives me an extra piece of banana, chocolate chip, vegan cake. Yeah. Not because, you know, that's not what we're looking for in life. We're looking to be able to benefit sentient beings. So we make that our strong thing. And then we make our motivation also strong to hold the bodhicitta. You know, today I'm holding bodhicitta. I want to do everything in my life in order to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. And I'm going to keep that in mind as I go through my life. So with a strong motivation like that, then that sets the framework for the whole rest of the day, and it really enables us to, to practice well. Whereas if we just get up in the morning, we don't generate that motivation, and we just get up and go, where's my coffee? Yeah, turn on the tube, turn on the internet, look, read the paper, the sports section especially. Yeah. Then, where are you? You know? What's your motivation for the day then? Oh, I stepped on some toes. Okay. To really set a strong intention. Okay, similarly, make a strong resolve thinking, I will become familiar with and never be separated from the awakening mind, that's the bodhicitta, until I have attained the highest enlightenment, and so forth. And today in particular, I shall not be parted from it. So that's that last part of the motivation, you know. I'm going to become familiar with bodhicitta. I'm not going to be separated from it today or ever, from now until I attain enlightenment. Okay? Whatever happens in the interim, that doesn't matter. My main thing is not to be separated from bodhicitta. And think about it. If you're separated from bodhicitta, what happens to you? Where does your mind go if you're separated from bodhicitta? Yeah, goes into self-centeredness. Goes into what else? Afflictions. Yeah? Separated from bodhicitta, the mind is just a mess of afflictions. Where do afflictions take us? Yeah? Okay, destructive karma. Where does destructive karma take us? Lower rebirth. Okay, so it's really important, not to be separated from bodhicitta. Yeah. That's why I say at the beginning of the day, set that as, there's three most important things to do today. Not harm, be of benefit, and practice bodhicitta. Yeah. Whatever else happens, somebody criticizes you, it's not a big deal. Somebody criticizing us does not send us to the lower realms. Think about it, okay? Somebody criticizing us does not send us to the lower realms. No other living being can make us have a lower rebirth. They can say, go to hell, all they want to, but they can't make us go there. Yeah. How do we get born in the hell realms? Our own destructive actions. Okay? So people can criticize us up, down, and across. That doesn't cause us to have suffering in our future life. But our negative actions, boing, they cause us to have suffering in future lives. Okay? So people can trash us. They can blame us for things we didn't do. They can beat us. They can disagree with us. They can yell and scream at us. None of that has the power to affect our future lives. How we respond to what they're doing has the power to affect our future lives. Because if we respond with afflictions, then we're going to create the negative karma and the cause for lower rebirth. But we don't have to respond with afflictions. Okay? Yeah? So that's why Shantideva, in one of his chapters, he goes on this big thing about how, you know, our worst enemies, far greater than any murderer or terrorist or, you know, suicide bomber or drive-by shooter or anything like that, the greatest enemy we have to fear is the afflictions that are inside. Other people, the worst they can do is make us lose this one life. But when you consider that we've been born and have died many, 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 many infinite times before, dying again is not a big thing. It's not something we're unfamiliar with. Okay? Worst they can do is make us die. But they can't make us have a bad rebirth. Yeah? Only we do that to ourselves through the power of the afflictions. So we have to really think about this deeply. You know? I mean, really spend some time in your meditation thinking about this. Because it's true, isn't it? Isn't it? Mm-hmm. It sounds funny. You know, oh, somebody can't make me have a rebirth, a lower rebirth. But when you think, what's the cause of a lower rebirth? It's negative karma. Nobody else can create my negative karma. I do that all by myself. Okay? So whatever people say, blah, blah, it's not a big deal. Okay? That we keep our mind in a good space, in a wholesome space, that's a big deal. Okay? So to really set that intention very powerfully in the morning. You know? And then, when our mind starts getting out of whack, it's very helpful, I think, to give a name to what's happening. Just say to ourselves, or even say out loud, my mind is under the sway of afflictions right now. Yeah. I'm angry. Yeah. Attachment is in my mind. I am not seeing reality. You know, to say this very clearly to ourselves. Usually what happens is we'll say, oh, attachment's in my mind. Ah, yeah, where's that beautiful thing I wanted? But we have to say, attachment's in my mind. My mind is not seeing reality. I'm under the sway of afflictions. Yeah? I've got to rescue myself. Okay? So to really, and you know, if just thinking it doesn't work, say it out loud to yourself. Okay? Write it on the computer. Write yourself a note or whatever. You know, the person in the next cubicle is going to hear you say, I'm under the sway of affliction. They might come rushing in, you know, call 911 or something. So maybe you just write it down. You know? Of course, here at the Abbey, if you said that, people would understand. If you go, my mind is under the sway of afflictions, then it's like people are going to know, okay, yeah, take a break. take some time off. Okay, so have that strong motivation. Okay, the King of Meditative Stabilization Sutra says, the more a human being analyzes something, because the force of his thought is focused on it, his mind dwells on it more strongly. Okay? So what that's referring to here is the more we cultivate this strong motivation, yeah, then because our mind's focused on it, then the mind dwells on that and it stays with us. Okay? So much of our practice is about motivation. It's really very, very important. And that's one of the things that really struck me when I first met the Dharma, you know, was my teachers talking about motivation. Because motivation's the real key to if something is wholesome and virtuous or unwholesome and non-virtuous. And it's impossible to be a hypocrite with your motivation. Yeah. with our actions, with our speech, we can be hypocritical. But the karma is created by our motivations. So if we're trying to put on a good show for somebody else, we're still creating rotten karma. Okay? So that kind of... I like that. Yeah, because our society likes to put on good shows. And especially since we did the discussion group about lying this afternoon, isn't a lot of lying in order to put on a good show? Put on a good appearance, not get blamed, not get criticized, not lose face. It's embarrassing, isn't it? You embarrassed by how attached you are to your reputation? Are you embarrassed? Yeah? I'm embarrassed. Okay. So also in the morning, okay, to make a strong determination to make your life meaningful, to be vigilant and stop the afflictions the moment they arise. In other words, not to indulge them. Not an affliction comes in the mind and you say, oh, this is an interesting affliction. I wonder what will happen if I follow it. Yeah? I want to understand how this affliction works. Let's let it take over my mind and then I can observe how it works. What happens? Dun, 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 dun. Okay? So to be vigilant and stop the affliction the moment it arises. To be intent on utilizing our body, speech, and mind to cultivate bodhicitta. Okay? And so to make a strong determination to realign our life so it focuses on the Dharma and not on ourselves and our own personal needs. Okay? But to realign our life so that it corresponds with our values, with our principles, with what we cherish most deeply in our own hearts. Yeah? Which is bodhicitta, isn't it? You know, when we have a clear mind, isn't bodhicitta the thing you cherish most in your own heart? Yeah? When we have an afflicted mind, what we cherish most in our own heart is ourself. But when we have a clear mind, it's bodhicitta. Okay? So to come back to that and align our life so that that value, you know, so that our virtuous values can be acted out. So take a job where you can keep good ethical conduct. Yeah? Don't take a job where you're going to be forced to lie and cheat and things like that. That's not setting a good condition for yourself. Okay? So all these kinds of things, think beforehand, what situation am I going to put myself in? And is this situation one conducive for having a virtuous mind and for practice? Or is this situation one that's conducive for breaking my precepts, generating a negative mind, and, you know, acting self-centeredly? Yeah, so really think in advance about the situations we put ourselves in. Yeah, many of you are parents. You have teenage kids. Isn't this one of the chief things you try and teach your teenager? Is think about where you go and who you hang out with and what situation you put yourself in. Yeah? At least that was when I was a teenager. That was the big thing they tried to get across to me. Of course, I thought I knew all of that already. Okay. Yeah. But that was the big thing, you know. So you're already making your own decisions. So our parents are saying, you know, put yourself in a good situation. Don't do something dangerous. Yeah, well, I didn't always listen so well. I did lots of dangerous things. But I look back now, and it's amazing that I didn't have really severe results from some of those stupid things I did. Yeah? I won't tell you stories right now. Okay? But, oh boy, some really stupid things. Yeah. But that's because my life wasn't aligned with bodhicitta. I didn't know about bodhicitta. And I wasn't thinking about the situations I was putting myself in, because I thought I could handle anything. Yeah. But I think we also have to be a little bit humble sometimes and realize we can't handle just everything yet. Yeah. When our mind's very strong, then we can handle lots of difficult situations. But when our mind isn't strong yet, let's not put ourselves in situations where the temptation is too great and where our mind's going to go out of control. Yeah. So it's kind of like we have to be a parent to our inner teenager. Maybe you have to actualize your inner parent. Yeah, inner childs run around a lot and made enough of a mess, you know? Okay, we need an inner parent who has some wisdom. Yeah, inner parent is not authoritarian and denying us this and getting on our case. Inner parent can be wisdom that kind of guides us. Yeah, so we have to do that. Do you think a book called Actualize Your Inner Parent would sell? Actualize Your Inner Child would. Yeah. Actualize Your Inner Parent. But it's true, if you think parents have more wisdom. Yeah. Have you ever noticed that your parents got wiser as you got older? Yeah? When you were 16, that was the peak of your parents' stupidity. Yeah? Your parents knew nothing when you were 16. Yeah? They got, you know, it's remarkable by the time you get to be 30, how, you know, our parents are a little bit wiser. They really grew up. Okay. So when we awake in the morning, set our motivation. I will make this day meaningful by transforming my mind. Okay? And then at the end of the day, check up. How did I do? Did I live according to my motivation? What did I do well? Where do I need some improvement? Okay? And I think if we really seriously do this on a daily basis, then we'll really start to change. You know, if we really take the time at the end of the day and, you know, okay, today I had the opportunity to lie, but I didn't. That's good. I rejoice. I'm happy. That's fantastic. Yeah? I'm going to do that again tomorrow. Look, I was successful. I'm going to do that again tomorrow. Or maybe, you know, someday, I really lost my temper at somebody, said something that I shouldn't have. So I'm going to do the four opponent powers and some purification, and especially set a strong resolve to be very careful about my speech tomorrow, and especially to be careful with my speech around certain people who I happen to be more careless with, or people who are more adept at pushing my buttons. You know, so set a strong intention. So I think this thing of the intention in the morning and checking up in the evening, if we do this consistently, it can really help us to start changing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Make a strong determination at the end of the day. I'm never going to give up bodhicitta. I'm continually going to practice the thought training practices. As long as I live, that's what I'm going to do. That's meaning my life. Okay, so the motivation really empowers our life, and it gives us so much force to do things. And even if we have a strong motivation in a virtuous direction, even if we forget it and do some negativities, because of our strong motivation to go in a good direction, we'll quickly notice those negativities and purify, and so the negativities won't be so strong. Okay? So motivation, very important. Okay? Then the second of the white seeds, of the five powers is the power of the white seed. So the book says we need to preserve the merits and insights arising from generosity, ethics, and meditation, which cause us to generate, maintain, and enhance the precious awakening mind. Okay, so all the virtue, the merits and insights we've gained from practicing generosity, for example, ethical conduct, for example, meditation, we want to preserve and enhance these. Okay, and make sure that they don't get destroyed. So we have to create them and then dedicate them. Okay, so the white seed in our text here, it said generosity, ethical conduct, and meditation. It also includes studying the Dharma, studying the thought training teachings, cultivating the bodhicitta that hasn't been cultivated, maintaining the bodhicitta that has been cultivated. Okay, doing purification practices like the 35 Buddhas or Vajrasattva or the Four Opponent Powers, doing the accumulation of merit. Okay, so such things as the seven limb prayer, doing that, even you do the short version where the words are short, taking some time and really meditating on those seven branches, that's a great way to purify and accumulate merit. Circumambulating, taking refuge, taking precepts, tomorrow we're going to take the eight Mahayana precepts, great way to purify and accumulate merit. And so all of this is done, the purification and accumulation of merit is done as a way of building up the foundation for bodhicitta. Okay? It's making our mind fertile so that the bodhicitta and wisdom as well will grow in it. Okay? So this whole practice of the white seed or the virtuous seed, creating merit, purification, any kind of virtuous action. Okay, giving, helping others, all of this kind of stuff. Okay, so really making a point in our day to do some practices specifically to create merit and to purify. Yeah, John told me yesterday that what he's going to start doing at the supermarket is buying one of the bags that you. The cloth bags that you can bring back to the supermarket many, many times, that he's going to buy them and give them to the person behind him in line. Yeah? I hope you didn't mind my sharing that. I thought it was a very...
I want anybody in the sauna to start doing that. Then there'll be a better environment and you guys will have a better practice.
Yeah. But it's, a simple thing to do that, random acts of kindness and, setting that intention and doing that, and then, there's a practice of generosity right there. Okay, very easy way to be generous. Okay? So, many of these things we can do throughout the day. When we came back from last week, we were at the monastic conference. That's why I didn't teach last week, last Thursday night. And our theme was the environment. And one of the presentations let us know that eating meat is actually, and raising livestock, is actually a greater, it puts more greenhouse gases in the environment than all the transportation does. Isn't that astounding? Because of the methane in the animal's stomach and their manure polluting the water and, what has to go into creating their food. I mean, it's an incredible thing that puts so much greenhouse gas into the environment. So there was a group that... is encouraging, I don't remember the name of the group, to be vegetarian once a week. Okay, here at the Abbey, we're always vegetarian. But we thought that just as we have retreat from afar in the winter, we'll have vegetarian from afar. And, you know, and encourage people to be vegetarian one time a week. And then send us your picture and we'll keep it in our kitchen. You know, just like when you do the retreat from afar, we have your picture in the meditation hall with us. So this way, I mean, it gives you more strength to be a vegetarian. And at least just even start one time a week. It makes an incredible difference. You know, if people were vegetarian once a week, and it's no big deal, is it? Okay? So start sending us your pictures. You know? And you might want to set a particular day each week. And, you know, this day I'm going to be vegetarian. And then you think of everybody at the Abbey being vegetarian and you recognize that you're part of a greater community and that there's all these other vegetarians from afar. Okay? Because, you know, many of you do the retreat from afar and you know what that sense of community means to you. So it's the same here. Okay? Okay, so that's a way to accumulate merit and purify. Okay? Okay, then the third is the power of destruction. Okay? So, our book says, understanding their disadvantages, as were explained earlier in the context of exchanging self and others, we should try and give up such disturbing emotions as the misconception of self, the self-centered attitude it gives rise to, and the inclination to neglect others, okay, by means of regret. So the power of destruction is we want to destroy or counteract all those factors that are opposite to generating bodhicitta, or all those factors that are unconducive, or what's the word, counter-indicative?
What's that?
Counterproductive, counter, like on medicine, the things that...
Contraindication.
Okay, so all those things that are contraindications to bodhicitta, that's what we want to destroy. Okay? So... self-centered attitude, self-grasping ignorance, all the afflictions, and the inclination to neglect others. Yeah. We don't like to think of ourselves as neglecting others, but whenever we're stuck in me, I, my, and mine, we're neglecting others, aren't we? Yeah. Because when our mind is so focused on I want, I want, I want, you know, there's no space for others. In it. Yeah. Reverend Mako, when she came here, had a beautiful saying, which I've stolen from her. Excuse me, Reverend Mako. Which goes, I want what I want when I want it. Yeah? So that's what we want to oppose, is that mind, that with that mantra of I want what I want when I want it. Not a second later, not anything slightly different than I want, you know. And what I want, not what you want, what I want. Okay? So when that is running our life, there's no space for others, is there? There's no space. Okay. We should follow the training advised in Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which says, it would be better for me to be burned, to have my head cut off and be killed, than to ever bow down to my enemies, the ubiquitous, disturbing emotions. So that's the same thing that I was saying at the beginning of the talk, okay? The disturbing our emotions are our real emotion, are our real enemy. And it would be better, you know, to be burned, to be decapitated, to be killed, than to bow down to the disturbing emotions. So when Shantideva says this, he does this to give us some oomph in our mind to oppose the disturbing emotions. Okay, doesn't reading that give you some oomph? Yeah, and thinking about it? Yeah, it's like, oh, this is serious business. Yeah, letting ignorance, anger, and attachment run my life is not just something to poo-poo and forget about. It's really serious. Yeah, serious enough that, you know, not letting them run my life is more important than preserving my life. Because, as I was saying, you know, other people can't send us to the lower realms, but these afflictions can. Okay? So meditating like this gives us much more inner strength, which is important. It makes our motivation stronger, doesn't it? We need that strong motivation. Okay, the power of destruction, destroying the self-grasping ignorance, the self-centered thought. Contemplate their disadvantages. That's very, very helpful. You know, all throughout the Lam Rim, you see thinking of the disadvantages of one thing and thinking of the advantages of the opposite. So it's a very, you know, very, very helpful practice. So what are the disadvantages of the afflictions? What are the advantages of, you know, releasing them? What are the disadvantages of self-centered mind? What are the advantages of counteracting it? Okay, so really meditating on this, then that gives us a lot of energy. Okay, it's kind of like when you're trying to decide which car to buy. What are the advantages of this car? What are the defects of this car? You know, you have lots of time to contemplate that. Yeah. What are the advantages of telling this person off? Oh, many. What are the disadvantages? Oh, not very many. You know, wrong way of thinking. Okay, but, you know, as with anything in our life, you know, if we think about advantages and disadvantages, it gives us more inner strength to do something. Okay, so understanding that the self-centered thought is the source of our suffering and eradicate it, oppose it when it arises. So instead of bowing down to it, you know, try and do something about it. Apply the antidotes to afflictions. And in doing all of this, you know, understanding, yeah, wisdom is much more effective than self-reproach. So that's why I'm really encouraging ourselves to contemplate with wisdom. What are the benefits of this? What are the disadvantages? If I do this, what result comes? If I do that, what result comes? When we just contemplate this with a clear mind and develop wisdom, then we have some understanding and inner certitude. But when we just should ourselves with self-reproach and guilt, I shouldn't do this. I'm such a bad person if I do this. I shouldn't do that. You know, that kind of way of thinking, that doesn't help us abandon the afflictions. That just makes our mind very tight. Yeah? Makes our mind extremely tight. But when we think about the benefits and disadvantages, it helps a lot. Okay? What also helps a lot in abandoning afflictions, and again, this is based on wisdom, is developing a sense of our own integrity. You know, I respect myself. I respect my spiritual practice. I really do. Really feeling that in our own hearts. You know, I have a sense of my own integrity. Therefore, I'm not going to let my body, speech, and mind go in this direction. So really thinking like that, and not, you know, thinking like that in our daily meditation practice, so we get that familiarity. That's the real key. Don't think that we're just going to think like that once the affliction's in our mind. No, we have to think like that when we have a clear mind in our practice. Okay? And then also the mental factor, that's consideration for others. one that doesn't want to adversely affect others, that really, genuinely, we don't want to have a bad influence on others. Yeah? And we don't want to harm others. And we don't want to make them lose faith in the Dharma by acting poorly. Yeah? We care about the effect of our actions on others. So again, thinking like this a lot with a clear mind in our meditation builds that mental factor. Yeah, and then that enables that mental factor to be more prominent when a situation arises where we really need it to stop ourselves from doing something that we don't really want to do. Okay? So these are all antidotes that we have to cultivate in advance of the situation to become familiar with them. Okay. It's exactly like learning to drive a car. You've got to practice in the parking lot when there aren't other cars around first. Yeah? Don't go on the highway and think you're going to be able to avoid a crash if you haven't practiced driving in the parking lot. Okay? It's like taking a typing test. Yeah? I remember in high school, you know, practicing typing, yeah, and you got to practice it, because when the teacher makes you do a typing test, if you haven't practiced it, you're not going to do very well on the typing test. Okay, so it's this whole thing, got to practice daily. You know, people who are musicians, they know this. Yeah, got to play your musical instrument daily, or you've got to sing daily, because you know, you keep up that ability so that it's really there when you need it. Okay? Okay. So we've done three of them. Yeah? And we've done the force of motivation, the force of virtuous seed, and the force of destruction, destroying everything that's counter-indicative to bodhicitta. So maybe there's a few minutes for questions. Do you have any? Or comments?
In the beginning you made the distinction between these five powers and the other five powers.
Yeah.
Could you...
I made a distinction between these five powers and the other five powers. Let's see if I can remember the other five powers. Faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. I believe, and I think that's right. Other questions? Yeah?
The self-centered thought is so sneaky and comes up so many different places. How do you assess that you're making some headway?
Okay, so the self-centered thought is very sneaky and it comes up where you least expect it. So how do you know that you're making some headway? I would say if you don't get angry as much, you're making some headway. If you're not running after objects of attachment as much, you're making some headway. If you're beginning to notice other people's feelings and care about their feelings, you're making some headway. If you're thinking more about bodhicitta and it's coming in your mind more often, you're making some headway. Okay? So it doesn't mean, you know, when we're talking about this, it doesn't mean we have to be perfect tomorrow. We're just, remember, you know, the dial, the rotating dial. We're just, you know, practicing, you know, turning it on a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, you know. So the idea isn't to criticize ourselves because we're not perfect. The idea is to really rejoice and give ourselves a pat on the back in a virtuous way for what we are doing and what we have accomplished.
I was walking tonight and I was thinking about taking the precepts, and the thought came to my mind that I might want to get a calendar, one of those daily calendars. And just like what you were saying, at the end of the day, mark off which of the five I've transgressed. And keep a tally. With, of course, the objective to work towards a blank calendar. It just occurred to me that that would be a good method, because when I first took refuge in May of 07, I didn't have the kind of insight to the Dharma that I have now. And in reflecting back on it, I just transgressed so many times that I can't account for them. And that's somewhat distressing to me. And I thought that that would be a good way to keep track, and then a good way to focus the purification practice at the end of the day.
Okay.
And I was wondering if you thought that would be good.
Yeah, okay, let me repeat it for the first people who are listening. Yeah, so he's saying that he was thinking, especially regarding the five precepts, that it would be very good to get a calendar and at the end of the day write down if he transgressed any precepts, you know, because he's seeing that since he took refuge about, 2.5 years ago, that, you know, at the beginning he just wasn't very careful or mindful at all, and so broke a lot of the precepts, and it's causing him some distress. So he's thinking, if he does this and really checks in with himself at the end of the day and assesses and makes amends and sets a new resolution, that it's going to, you know, really be good for him, and he'll have the goal of having a blank calendar with no transgressions of precepts. So would I talk about that? I think it's great. Yeah? Yeah, I think that's a very good idea.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you taught us when I first came to the Dharma is a story about the monk who had black and white stones. And I remember for the 6 months of when I practiced and I heard about the 10 non-virtuous actions, I used that on a daily basis. And it was quite interesting to see how it affected my next day when I saw the amount of black stones I had in the pile. In relationship to the white stones. And it's kind of a creative thing. For my mind, it's kind of creative. It would be helpful. I think that's something
Okay, so there's the story about a monk. I can't remember if it was Ben Kungel or who it was, but who at the end of the day used to evaluate, and he had two different color stones. Okay? So let's say pink and purple. No, that they're too close. How about pink and green? Okay? So pink were the, if you did some kind of virtuous actions, green were the non-virtuous actions. At the end of the day, he would, or actually, I don't think he even waited till the end of the day, but as he was going through the day, he would either put down a pink stone, put down a green stone, and then at the end of the day, kind of count them up. And you said that you really did that. Did you actually take stones and do that? You painted the stones.
Yeah, I need them more, you know, black and white things. So
yeah. Okay. But you painted the stones and then actually did that, and it helped you. Yeah, it made a big difference. Okay. Yeah.
You know, the setting your motivation in the morning, when we used to retreat every year, you would say, before you get up tomorrow morning, you know, you have to say, I'm not going to harm anybody, I'm going to try to be a benefit, I'm a member of those bodhicitta. And I would do it on retreat, and then I would forget about it, you know. This went on for about 5 or 6 years. 4 years ago, you know, something clicked and I finally created that habit. And it was very easy to create the habit in the morning before I got out of bed, because it's an excuse not to get out of bed, right? and I was, something so simple on the maze can have such a profound effect on the quality of your day. And what you end up finding is that you don't just say those things like in the morning. You're laying there in bed, you're going to benefit people, and you think about the things that you're doing that day and how you can do them in a way that's more beneficial. And it's really I'm just so amazed at something that simple analysis on the planet.
Okay. He's saying that when he first started coming to retreats, he set the motivation to abandon harm, to, you know, benefit and to maintain bodhicitta. And he'd do it for the duration of the retreat and then forget about it. But then a few years ago, something really clicked and he started doing it on a regular basis. And he's found that it really makes a very big difference in his life, because especially while he's still lying in bed, if he says, I'm not going to harm or I'm going to benefit, then think of, you know, what he's going to do during the day and where he could possibly harm, where he could possibly benefit, you know, how he can maintain his bodhicitta. And he said it's helped him tremendously throughout the day to behave like that. And then, of course, when we fulfill our aspiration, we feel good about ourselves, don't we? Yeah, we feel really good about ourselves. Okay, so we have to end. So keep this in mind for next week, and then next week, hopefully we'll continue with the other two of the five powers.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable, and their divine actions spread in the ten directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Dhammur Akamanda Vakamiryatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness. Our full tempting guest, so generously, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the ten directions, and especially at Shravastiya, be in the west. Lord,